This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com. Really appreciate all of you joining us. If you haven't done so, if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, please do so. Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And please rate and review the show. And, of course, you can find all of our programming, CannabisRadio.com. I want to just give you a heads up for those that listen to Blunt Business. What is going on with the social equity program for those that are licensed, looking to be licensed in the state of Illinois? So there's a couple different variations of how people are being able to go and obtain social equity licenses. One of them is a lottery system. And if you get to hear the story of what that guest is talking about in terms of going through the lottery and going through the partnerships and what the state has set up. Now, we can say, obviously, there's a lot of good people that are coming in, getting the opportunity to go ahead and get a license through that route. But we know that there are some other things that are going on that, you know, could be abusing the privilege of getting a license through the lottery system. Or you could do what our guests are doing here, where they were able to go through, had the business wherewithal, had the capital, had the means necessary to go ahead and obtain a social equity license. And what they did was an interesting aspect where I'm reading from Chicago Tribune from this past June. They converted a former Riketon Park, Illinois grocery store into a growing space for adult use cannabis and anticipating selling to dispensaries. And, you know, later on, they went ahead and opened a dispensary that was next to the growing operation. And then going forward, we now have what's called Galaxy Labs. And without any further ado, I want to go ahead and introduce specifically the president and board member and CEO and chairman of the board proper, respectively, Michelle and Rick Ringgold of Galaxy Labs. Thanks for being on with me. Really appreciate you taking time to join us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Now, with what happened here, there's a lot of what you, I mean, the business backgrounds for both of you are expansive. There's so much that's going to be said about, you know, what you've accomplished leading up to being in entrepreneurs in the cannabis space. So, Rick, 20 years experience as an entrepreneur, worked in construction, and, you know, you have an MBA. You served in the U.S. Army as a sergeant, 2 terms in Desert Storm, and currently a service-disabled U.S. Army veteran, president and CEO of Sargent Construction Incorporated. Michelle, you're an MBA, a CPA, also, again, 20 years experience as an entrepreneur, working on accounting, tax compliance for construction, manufacturing, government entities, proven track record, $500 million of funding for many of the clients that you've had on in similar industries, and you're very well versed in the Illinois Cannabis Industry Tax Act there. And going through all of this, there's just so much I could go into, but what you went and decided to do was you created a craft grow. With initially, as we just mentioned from the Chicago Tribune article, there's a lot of components and pieces that are going on to what you've built so far with Galaxy Labs and the way you got the licensing to be able to go and do that. So if you can kind of summarize where the process went for you and what was the initial intent of what you were going to do with this license.
Hey, sure. I will take a stab at explaining that.
Sure.
So we were part of the initial application process that started in 2019 for craft growers. We had the intent of forming a cannabis company, but as you are probably aware, the application process from 2019 to 2021 was a very long stretch of time where because of COVID, because of the state figuring out some of the rules and regulations that they wanted to implement, it just took a really long time. During that time, we basically had an agreement for a building that was in Schaumburg on the north side of the city. And because it took so long, we actually lost that lease. The owner decided to sell the property out from under us, which, as you can imagine, it was quite devastating. But luckily for us, we didn't have a lot of money tied up into it. It was sort of a gentleman's agreement. And so when they decided they could no longer wait on the process to come to fruition, they decided they had to sell. So we understood that, given the fact that we were in a hold pattern and didn't know really when we were going to be awarded a license and could actually start building out. So fortunately for us, a neighbor of ours owned the property in Richton Park, and Richton Park, and was really interested in seeing if we could use the space for our business. Well, we didn't know Richton Park very well at the time, even though geographically they're not far from where we live. So we went and spoke with the mayor of Richton Park, who was about as receptive as anybody could be in government to a cannabis operation coming into your town. So they were very supportive. The entire board of Richton Park was very supportive supportive of us, given the space had been empty for 5 years. So the grocery store had been vacant for 5 years. And quite frankly, it was a really large demolition and clear out process compared to a lot of other things to, we consider just building out a building for the craft grow. And that was not feasible because of the cost associated. So we decided to retrofit the grocery store.
Right. How many square foot was that grocery store, by the way? Was that for a particular facility?
The facility is 31,500 square feet.
Yeah.
Which was a fairly decent size building. But compared to some of the craft grows, it's not that big. It's actually an average size space.
No, Rick, I want to ask you, because of what's already existing in that space already, with grocery stores, obviously they have a very intricate and very expensive refrigeration process. Just something where I guess you could do a lot of things with climate control. Were there any things within the grocery store itself in the building that could be utilized in the grow process?
Well, we thought about that, and we actually looked at a lot of it. There were some walk-in freezer components that we thought we would be able to leverage. But at the end of the day, during the design process, we figured out that, you know, being very cumbersome freezers that were existing, were taking up prime real estate for growing.
Yeah.
So we had to make a decision, save a little money and leverage some of the existing stuff, or tear it all out and put in what we designed to be a state-of-the-art, high-end facility for indoor agriculture. We went with the latter. We decided we couldn't use some of the old freezers. And in fact, it's interesting that you asked. That's a very good question. Some of that stuff in the demolition process was really tough to get out of the building.
But see, I would imagine that's a great idea because, well, I mean, from a construction company background, both of you have, it's like, is there anything that can be repurposed out of what's being done here? Not just the 31,000 square foot, which that was an idea where the first thing I was thinking about was like, could you do some of that? Because it would be a good way, you know, if you're going to retrofit, is there anything existing that could be just taken? But again, that space and, you know, reestablishing it, just kind of getting it where, you know, you have it set to go. You set that up again for craft growing and then to get out there. So, you know.
One of the things I like to add too is that the space has been sitting for like 5 to 7 years. And our facility is really the state of the art where we implemented artificial intelligence. So really a lot of that equipment was dated. But one of the things I would like to talk to the listeners about is lessons learned. And some of the things that we was painfully discovered when we did not know we chose this space. Hands down, when you choose a craft grow or cultivation center, you need to make sure you do an evaluation on the infrastructure. You need to make sure that you have enough power, because if you don't have enough power, now you're dealing with ComEd, and sometimes there's a year wait on transformers. That is huge. Making sure that the roof is sound, making sure that the structure is sound. So we did have some challenges. And if we would have known these things up front, it would have been helpful. So I just think that if there's folks out there, because there were 80 something licensed, for some reason, some of them went away. There's about 63. It's only a handful of us that's operational. And when I say operational, because in our license, we can have a lab. And a lab is a lot cheaper, just to give you an idea. Our build out just with 5,000 square feet of canopy, because the state has a rule where you only get 5,000 square feet of canopy, and then you get to increase up to 14,000 in increments of 3,000. Now, I know the state is allowing craft growers, hopefully, I think it's finalized, to actually get the entire 14,000 square feet of canopy, because that's been a challenge for those that are looking for money, because an investor is like, well, you really can't make a whole lot of money with just 5,000 square feet. So that was a big win. But if I had to say anything, if you're choosing the space, make sure that it has the infrastructure needed. And that means your electrical, which could be huge delays, making sure your roof is intact, and that you have a plan to do an assessment before you go and invest money in something that, may be a problem.
Stay tuned. We have more Blunt Business coming up after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Michelle and Rick.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Ringgold of Galaxy Lab. Now, one of the things I want to make a point of, not just this cultivation, not just the dispensary that you're working on as well, but it's the craft grow. And the thing is, that's going, providing, flower to those that are non-MSOs. So other like-minded social equity licensees with their own dispensaries, you're going to be able to provide to them this craft cannabis, which is going to be much different than the small batch, than it is going to be largely manufactured MSOs are going to be in the space.
Yeah, we do sell to MSOs though, so just to be clear. But the difference is, you hit it right on, is that the most we can have is 14,000 canopy. MSOs can have over 100,000 worth of canopy. So we're focused more on quality and premium. Just think of it when you think of beer or you think of fine wine. You have your lower-end products, but then you have your higher-end. We're really focused on premium.
Exactly. But that's the other thing I was trying to make the point of, is that you get the opportunity to, as a non-MSO, to work on quality and to working on these batches that are set of a certain quality, set of a certain thing where, and of course, anybody can go and buy from you, but it's the attention to detail and what you're growing within that's really crucial to make the point of. In the process of getting this license, now, as I said, there'll be a Blunt Business episode that'll be coming up a little bit later on this month in January, where people can go and hear about the story of the lottery system. So I'm not going to go into the whole detail of that. We went to that program, but specifically, there were so many different licenses being put out by the Department of Agriculture, and this is initially from the original House bill I saw from the Governor Pritzker actually signed, that would be for 40 some odd cannabis craft grower licenses, 32 infuser licenses, transportation licenses, 141. That's obviously all changed. But the one thing was that they created a lottery system and there would be loan terms in place. They allocated 5 years, $34 million in loans, expected to be available in the first year, qualifications that needed to be met. But you didn't have to go through all that. What can you tell me about having to be able to go and bypass what some people were using this lottery system and just be able to get a license outright and not having to go through all that extra, run around to try to go ahead and win one, you earned it.
Sure. During the application process, when we first started this, we felt like we had a strong application, felt like, as you described, Michelle and I's background would help us. And then the additional fact, and, this has changed now, but the fact that I'm a service-disabled veteran, also played a role in strengthening our application in terms of meeting the social equity and veteran intentions of the program. And then we qualified for the social equity piece, which, you know, is kind of rare to get all of those qualifications, the business background, the service-disabled vet, the social equity piece, all in one or two people. It usually takes putting together a slew of five or six people. And then you have to build the actual cannabis industry experience to actually fill out the application or develop a plan, because that's really what the application is. It's a plan on how you're going to deliver that license, make it profitable and sustainable. And so we had to engage experts to help us figure out a good plan. And I believe we did that. We did that very well. But as Michelle mentioned earlier, when we submitted our application, that was a long wait process. But when we did get the news that we were awarded an application, slightly after that, the scoring process for the applications was revealed. And we were among the top, top tier of applications that were scored above what was expected. So I think we got a perfect score, which, you know, I'm a realistic person. There's nothing perfect. Right. But in terms of meeting the criteria for the application, we were scored perfectly.
Yeah. One of the things I would like to add is the lottery was only for the dispensary. So let's be clear. The state has not done a lottery for craft grows or infusions. It was just for the dispensary. So that's how we got the dispensary part. And we're going to talk a little later. Okay, you got the license. Now, what do you do? Because it takes an awful lot of capital to get a dispenser, craft grow off the ground. Craft grow for 5,000 square feet, depending on the technology and everything. They said the average is something like 5 million. Galaxy spent almost $8.5 million because of the technology and what we were trying to offer. But one thing we realized, too, was that we needed to become vertically integrated in order to get in these doors. So we did not win any lottery for the dispensary, and that was an ordeal all by itself. But what we did do is we had the resources and the capital to purchase licenses. What's happening here is the social equity entities, and it's unfortunate, they're having a tough time financing the deal. And you have funding the deal and finding financing. And you have the state that has timelines on when this must happen. So with the craft group, I think they gave one more extension. I hate to say it, there's going to be a lot of folks that's not going to be able to pull this off. So there's going to be opportunities to purchase the craft grow. Same thing with the dispensary. We found someone that was not interested for whatever reason of moving forward, although they had won the license. So we purchased the license outright. Best decision of purchasing a dispensary that we can ever make, considering we are a craft grow. It helped us get into doors because you have the big MSOs or even some of the social equity craft grows that also own a dispensary, one or two. So if we're going to put our product in our dispensary, you need to put your product in your dispensary. So the B2B, the business to business, was critical for us. So we purchased that license.
Michelle, I want to go and unpack a lot of what you just read right there, because in the business process, and Rick, I want to come back to you in terms of just from the veteran side, because I think there's a lot there in terms of what brought both of you into the space in the first place. I'm going to want to ask about that and find that out. But initially, the pre-construction permit, you were one of three licensees that were granted for the craft grow May of 2022. Then you get to the chance to finally go ahead and do an opening in December of last year, 2023. But now you're going to have the actual opening. It's going to be in February 2024 for the dispensary, correct?
That is correct.
Right. The craft grow is already operational, been operational since July, and we have our products in stores today.
And just to make mention, I'm looking for the story from richlandpark.org, making the point that a facility, $12 million. So, I mean, the money being spent so far, and like you were saying just before, to be able to go and withstand an 18-month delay to get to the point of being able to go ahead and have, you know, the craft grow facility, not to mention the dispensary or the cultivation and all that coming together, the time you had to wait to get to that and get through all the red tape. The one thing I've imagined is, first of all, you had to have the capital. Second, the people that you had brought to you were, I mean, I've learned from a lot of people that have been in the social equity process in other states, if they're not, if they're just hoping that the whatever they're going to be loaned, initially is going to be enough to get them, across the finish line, it's not. So they have to find other avenues to help sustain and to move forward to continue to grow, and any setbacks that come in, you have to be also considering that. But you did all of that, and I would imagine with both of your backgrounds, you had enough people to work along with you to help continue to move forward.
Yeah, on the craft world side, we own 70%, Rick and I, and then we have 30%, which is family and friends. We didn't get any state or government money. Let's just be clear. We did not get that. So, but being in the market that I'm in as a CPA, and, it's probably about 35, 40 folks that I employ on the CPA side, that does give me access to individuals that are like-minded, that have, some access to cash. So we were very fortunate. And there's a couple of good lenders out there in the cannabis space that, some I would say stay away from, but there were some that is very helpful. But you do have to have good credit and things like that. So, we were able to succeed through, number one, having our own capital to put in, having access to family and friends that was able to, sell a point or two up to 30%. And then also our experience, right? Our experience with, managing money, and then Rick's experience with construction.
Right. In the story with Richland Park, they make the point, and you also say this quote, this venture, quote, about creating jobs and economic opportunities, it is our way of giving back to those communities affected the most by the war on drugs, and to not simply make a dollar for ourselves. You put so much into this, and to bring this here again as a way to give back is commendable. The other part I want to just understand is, among the group that you have together that is comprised of Galaxy, it's minority women and veterans, 82% Black, 11% Hispanic, 33% women, 53% veterans. So, Rick, I want to ask you this now. We've always heard a lot right now in terms of, for the veterans that come back from wars, obviously you've done several terms. You led 100 soldiers. You know well enough that I don't know how much that you've had any interaction with cannabis or using it as a treatment, or fellow soldiers, fellow people that were on the lines with you that have also used. Was that any part of the onus that also brought the idea of going into the cannabis industry and building this particular venture together, you and your wife?
Absolutely. That played a big part of it. So I got out of the military in 1992. And some of the folks that I served with, we did a reunion right around 2004, 2005. When we exited the military together, there was over 128 of us.
Yeah.
When we did the reunion, over half of that group had died. Right. They died from depression. They died from alcohol abuse. They died from using opioids. Right. And so one of the things that I like to think, and I'm very hopeful about, is that the studies on the positive impacts of using cannabis to treat anxiety, to treat PTSD and those types of things, as opposed to using opioids, will come to light. A lot of veterans simply can't function in society if they have to stay on opioids to manage their condition. Cannabis is an alternate. I'm not a doctor. I'm certainly not qualified to recommend any treatment for any, sickness.
Oh, of course.
But I do know that several of the people that I'm still in contact with that are former veterans, former war veterans that actually have trauma, they prefer cannabis much more than they prefer opioids. And I think we all live longer if we don't have to take opioids, right? Because there are a lot of side effects in addition to the level that it, limits you in functioning in society. Going to a job, working heavy equipment, doing any of those, you can't do that if you're taking opioids. But you can do that if you manage cannabis. I'm not saying to go to work or whatever after or during, you know, but in the evenings when you, you know, just getting sleep, cannabis helps a lot of people sleep, and that also impacts anxiety and depression and other things that they may be going through just by getting more sleep. So it definitely played a big role in my decision making, not only for, you know, everyone else, but for me personally as a service disabled veteran.
Yeah. And for me, you know, it's been the impact. I grew up in Roseland, which is a pretty tough community here in Illinois. And let me just tell you, the war on drugs was real. And a lot of my friends, you know, served some time for, you know, being caught with, you know, a little bit of marijuana and or cannabis is the correct term. And I just say that also we, and I'm not shy about it, how do we apply or qualify as a social equity? We have a son that, you know, has struggled. And, you know, it has, you know, he took us through so much as a kid, and now we were able to use his situation to now take advantage of the opportunity of the social equity and now actually give back. We're creating between our craft grow and our dispensary in Richland Park, we're creating about 45 jobs on the craft grow side, and we're creating 30 jobs on the dispensary side. So in that little community, we're creating 75 jobs. And that's really important to us because those are good paying jobs. And we're just happy to be able to do it.
One of the other areas I always talk about when it comes to social equity is the legacy operators. So as you said, those that have been convicted, they've been incarcerated unjustly. But the idea is that, you know, while we have certain people that are able to go and come in, you know, that they meet the qualifications for social equity, that's one of the areas I want to make sure that, you know, it's for me, I'll see certain states, especially New York State, where they've, you know, offer education, they offer certain programs, is enough of a course to go ahead and allow the pathway for a legacy operator to go ahead and legitimize their business because they were there beforehand. Will they get a chance to go ahead and get a license and be able to go ahead and do business themselves? What do you think about what they've done in Illinois so far? Obviously, you're hiring those that have gone through that kind of plight. You can do that and offer them as employees, but for those legacy operators that want ownership, that want to go be controlling that environment, what would you say about the part that, I mean, if they also need to go and do their own thing where, I'll put it like this, every social equity operator needs to follow the example that you're following here because you have the means, the wherewithal, the people that you can bring on board, and the intent and your mission is exemplary. Totally exemplary. Of all the stories I've heard here on the network, I really, you know, not to mention, you know, both of your backgrounds and Rick also, not to say the fact that, you know, thank you for your service never goes far enough. It never does. I've known that from enough interviews to say that, you know, we're eternally grateful for what you've done and for the people you worked around. And collectively, this business is great what you've done. But for those that want to follow this path, and if it's the legacy operators, you know, in one case, the illicit market can be brought down significantly, which is, you know, what every state needs to be worried about. And second, you know, what do they need to do to get themselves to where you might be? What should they be doing in terms of following the same idea, the same example, you know, finding the right people to work with and be able to go ahead and sustain any setbacks or obstacles to get the license and create their own business?
Well, there's not exactly a clear roadmap, but there are some foundational pieces that they should probably think about. And I know Michelle is going to add a lot to this, but from my perspective, they need to first educate themselves about any information that's available to them about trends in Illinois, because Illinois' market is different from the market in Colorado and California and even Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Very familiar with the Tax Act. And then you got to figure out the biggest barrier, the elephant in the room, is the funding for a business like this. If you're anticipating being a craft grower, you got to ask yourself some really hard questions about what kind of operation you want to run and what the expectations are in terms of funding it, right? Because there's a thing that we laugh about all the time as people in this industry is called the cannabis tax, right? You buy a nail at one store, and if you're going to use it in your home, it costs you $2. But if you buy that same nail in that same store and they figure out it's going into a craft facility or a cannabis facility, it'll cost you three times as much. So that's the cannabis tax.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
It really is real. Some of the people who provide services to us and provide equipment to these kinds of businesses, that they can charge a premium because there are fewer choices. And if your ambition is to be truly a craft batch operator where your product is slightly above the existing market, then it's going to be slightly more expensive for you. So if you're going to take that path, then you got to be prepared for that. Understanding what the budget is for building out a facility like this is really imperative because, you know, construction in general is risky. But doing a design build for a craft grow facility in a state that's relatively new, so there's not a lot of builders that have that experience that you need that's necessary to produce a quality product.
Now, that's the other part I'm going to make mention too. Imagine if you were leasing, like I've seen and some other people talking about a cannabis tax will be applied on that. Because I know about how there's certain landlords that'll just change things up a little bit, you know, just if they feel like they want to do it, they, you know, because of the financial aspects of that company, they can kind of screw with them as all as they want. But Michelle, please go ahead.
Yeah, I really want to address the question about if I am a legacy grower, and I think what I heard you say, and I have a background, I've been in a while. I think that's that's really what.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So first of all, I think Rick is right. You definitely need to understand the Tax Act and understand what's allowed and what's not. I think the rules are a little stricter under a craft grower cultivator versus a dispensary. But just because you have had a felony does not necessarily mean that you will be excluded. So I just think that it's really important, particularly on the dispensary side, that you understand what the rules are. If there's an opportunity, depending on what type of felony you have, to get that expunged, to talk to someone at the state to see if, you know, this particular felony would be accepted. Because if you have a felony and you just say, oh, well, I'm never going to be able to own a dispensary. I'm never going to be able to get in this business. That's not exactly true. The way we qualified, something we didn't even know. My husband looked at the regs. He understood it. We certainly didn't qualify as individually or social equity, but because our son met certain criteria, which he had to read through all this red tape, we determined that, hey, we actually qualified for social equity under that program at that particular time. So I can't stress how important it is to really understand the regulations, understand what your barriers are. And just because you had some trouble with the law does not mean you cannot get into this business.
What I usually about my legacy operator is those that were selling or distributing prior to being legalized. Right. But the other part is that, you know, you make a great point is that, all right, you didn't have to go to the social equity program to get the business out. You could have done without, but why not take advantage of it? Like that's the thing you need to look for that. If you have that available, yes, take advantage of it. Absolutely. I agree completely.
Yeah, because there's programs specifically related banks out there that will waive the fees because the fees are very different than the fees if you had an accounting firm or a construction firm. Because it's not legal at the federal level, the bank fees are real. There's programs, if you can get the social equity criteria, that's way. There's lending programs out there. So there's a lot of benefits to being social equity. And some of the traditional social equity that came from this area or this, there's other criteria, like I said, with our son, that you may not know that you qualify for.
Right. My God, this is so great. Stay tuned. We have more Blunt Business coming up after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Michelle and Rick Ringgold. I love this conversation because there's so many different aspects that, I mean, I'm already at 30 minutes. I'm kind of unfortunately out of time. I could go along a lot farther in the process. And I mean, on your own individual backgrounds, and I've never even scratched the surface, honestly. But what I wanted to at least do is let's go ahead and talk about Galaxy Labs and just what you have right on the process. So the website initially, GalaxyLabsCraft.com, GalaxyLabsCraft.com. So make sure there's an S right there in the middle. And, you know, right now you're going through and you're creating, you know, again, small batch craft cannabis. Take me through what you're doing right now within the grow and what's being going in the dispensary now.
So we just recently chopped our first harvest and packaged
out
and delivered to stores. I think it's three dispensaries that we're in right now. And we have conversations going on with about 60 other stores that we plan to put our product in their store. The craft grow, we have, as Michelle said earlier, we have 5,000 square feet of canopy. We are a dual tiered grow, meaning that we realized that we were going to be challenged with the amount of space necessary to grow the full 14,000 square feet of canopy that the state allows once you're fully expanded out, and the ancillary space is necessary to support the growing process. So we decided to build dual tier, and we have three rooms that we currently harvest every 21 days. Each one of those rooms yields about 250 to 275 pounds of craft cannabis. We run six strains for each one of those harvests. And like I said, we harvest that amount every 21 days. We're really proud of the technology that we have. We use a process called crop steering, where we totally control the environment, the humidity, the temperature, the light, the water, the fertigation that for the plants, so that we control their life cycle from the time that the seed is grown or a clone is clipped until the time that we chop the plant down and yield the harvest or the cannabis off of that plant.
Yeah.
So we're really proud of our capabilities to do that. We've hired some really great people. We ourselves still work in the facility ourselves. We actually buck, trim, and defoliate plants. So we're touching plants. We're really, you know, we're not hands-off operators. We're in the facility almost every day with our teams trying to figure out how to do things right and trying to figure out how to do things better.
Yeah. And I'd like to add what's coming up. What are we doing? I hope I can mention the strands.
Of course, please.
Top of the line strands. You know, to our listeners, we have Apple Fritter. We have Dosey Trop. We have Garlic Cocktail 7. We have Gary Payton, Jealousy, Motor Breath, 15. But what's important about these strands is that it's premium. A lot of the public with the higher the THC. First, we have very high THCs. We don't put anything in our premium jars that's not more than 22% THC or like less than 22% THC. And quite frankly, we have stuff that goes up above 30. But it's really about the terp. It's really about the terpene. It's no different than wine, where you can get a very cheap Mad Dog high proof wine, but it's not good quality. Our terps are at 2% all the way close to 4% of terpene. So that is very important that I want to tell our listeners. And we're going to actually be in at the end of this week, we will be in almost 15 different stores. So please visit us. We're at the Cookies Dispensaries. We're at Feline Dispensary. We're at Parkway Dispensaries. We are also I'm just giving you all the dispensaries. We are going to be going into the Windy City dispensaries. So we have quite a bit of foot market. We've only launched a week and a half ago. So we really want you guys to support, come out and visit us. at our dispensaries. As far as our dispensary, it's located in Richland Park. Our grand opening is February 15th. We're going to have sesh buses out there where you can come in onto the parking lot and consume. We're going to have a live DJ, music, free phone. We're going to have free food. We're going to be giving out swag as well as samples. So we're super excited.
Fantastic. This is really amazing experience when you have together what you've built so far for the community and for the team you have on board. I love it. So does it mention the website for the craft. Now, is there a website already set up for the dispensary itself or galaxydispensaries.com? Here we go. Galaxydispensaries.com. That's where you'll go and find for the information on that coming soon. But by the time this episode comes out, we'll be much closer to the grand opening. And congratulations to all this. I mean, you made it past the finish line. You're here. And I imagine there must be, I'll ask one more question. Have there been a lot of those other licensees that have talked to you or a lot of other people that have just reached out to you from other areas asking about how you went ahead and moved forward to find the right people to get this all the way to fruition?
So that's a very good question, right? Because there have been some people that we're talking with, that we have relationship with, that are social equity operators as well. And we have success in varying degrees, right? Some folks are still at the early stages of planning and securing capital. Some folks are finishing up their build and getting ready to launch their product right behind us. And then there's a few that are even ahead of us, and they've actually been in the market for a few months, and they know how to survive and how to get to the next step. So there is a connection amongst some of the social equity operators here in Illinois. There's a couple of groups that actually host weekly meetings where we talk about the challenges and actually talk about ways to promote legislation that'll help our industry here in Illinois. And there's also the city colleges. Like we're in a partnership with the Olive Harvey College, where we actually aid in mentoring and teaching some of the students that do have a cannabis program, where they teach people how to either work in dispensaries or how to cultivate and grow the plant. So we wanted to be a part of that. We're very proud to partner with them. We look for more partnerships like that, because one of the things that we want to promote is the actual position that people take when it comes to working in the cannabis industry, right? I would assume that it's very much like post-prohibition, right? The guy that used to have to take the back road to deliver his product and maybe take the chance of going to prison for doing what they
did.
And then now prohibition is basically over and it's legal. And some of the people who were outlaws actually now run legitimate businesses and have to find ways to find good people and train people on processes and equipment and the market. And that's where we are right now. So very happy about what we've done and the relationships that we've built with both small social equity operators, as well as some of the MSOs. I know a lot of times they get a rough, and especially in these conversations, you know, they get beat up because they did have a head start. They do have 200 plus square feet of canopy compared to my 5 or 14, right? And there's no social equity owners in that first group of folks that got the opportunity to participate in the medical cannabis program. But some of them are starting to see the value in helping and partnering smaller craft grows. They certainly take notice and respect quality product. So I think there's opportunities for partnerships to be garnered there as well.
Would there be any opportunities if they know about your extensive construction building background, would they try to tap into you about trying to have them tap into your team to go ahead and do construction? Would that still be something you would do still, or is that now like you've moved on from that?
I think they'd probably build it out their facility because that's their biggest bid, right? They're retrofitting of outdated facilities. I don't think I would do it because it's a full-time job. It's not something you can
do. Oh, no, no doubt.
And so it could take a lot of attention, a lot of time. And like I said, there's not a lot of people in the state that have a ton of experience. If you think about it, when you build a craft grow, the electrical requirements for that facility are similar to that of a nuclear plant. Just keep that in mind. You're building a facility that has infrastructure and electrical requirements that lobby alongside with a nuclear plant. So to put that in the neighborhood or the funding, especially designing, you know, it's a big deal. It's not a part-time job.
Oh, no, no, no. I can imagine. Michelle, you were going to go make a point?
No, I was just going to say, and just truth be told, is that although Rick has a construction firm and I have a CPA firm, of course, we're using that, but we wanted to stay independent. So we actually hired a general contractor that has the experience and have built these craft grow or cultivation centers around the country. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing with the financial piece. Yes, I have enough understanding to make sure things are right. But at the end of the day, I hired experts that understood 280E so I can leverage and make sure we minimize and take advantage of tax savings. So I just want to, you know, put that out there as well.
Yeah, it on the construction side, we definitely hired a contractor to do the physical work.
Right.
And we had to work it was a design build. So we hired an engineer and an architect and we designed the thing. And then we contracted out to a contractor to build it. And then the architect and myself pretty much managed
the
contractor.
Well, you're going to be able to, you knew what the blueprint had and you could be like, oh, well, hold on, we're going to do like this. And right now I got to ask one more thing. In terms of what now this business has created, because you were working in separate, basically in separate businesses in different environments altogether, but now you're together on this project. I mean, when you look at this now, was that also just was that something you considered that you thought, oh, we're going to go to work a lot more together?
We worked together before. We worked together before, and, you know, it has its ups and it has its downs. Right. When you work together and you see each other all day and then you see each other all afternoon, especially in a business where there's a lot of tension and stress, deadlines and, you know, budgets to keep. Yeah, we definitely had our moments where
we're still together.
We literally had our moments where we didn't see eye to eye, but we managed to work it out.
Yeah,
we had a little bit of experience working together before. I used to work in Michelle's CPA firm.
Oh, okay.
As an executive vice president, so I know what it's like to work with her. She's a very driven person.
So I
know exactly what to expect, and I don't know what she probably thinks about me.
Well, you
know what to expect.
Hey, we have our strengths, and we understand you have to have clear roles. And you know, he stays in his lane, I stay in my lane. But let me just say that we couldn't do this without our employees because we were good business people. And you know, I'm a CPA, so I was able to run a successful business. In the military, he was a mechanical engineer. He's able to run a successful construction company. But let's make no mistake, we never grew cannabis or been in this industry on a commercial level. So we invested in bringing on folks that really understood this industry, from bringing on folks that had the degrees in agriculture, that, you know, were plant scientists, that had a proven track record. Some of them came from large MSOs and they've seen a lot. What works? What doesn't work? So we really invested in our people and we couldn't have done it without them.
You're right. But part of it is the jobs they get are because you both decided to get out of the sectors you were successful in and say, we're going to do something a little different. And that's what we did.
Yeah.
And you've made it a year. Now here comes the next phase of like, how's this going to go? But obviously you have all the means wherewithal and experience and expertise and wisdom to make this work. And I wish you nothing but the best, both of you, with the Galaxy Lex. Thank you both for being on with us. It was a wonderful experience. Really appreciate you taking time out.
Thank you so much for having us. Really enjoyed talking with you this afternoon.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So again, I've been joined here with Rick and Michelle Reingold with Galaxy Labs. And thank you, listeners, for listening in. We'll talk to you next time.